south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, now, if you remember, a week or so ago, I was talking about Puerto Rico, since I guess you could say it's the 21st Latin American country. Even though it really is a U.S. territory or commonwealth. And as you probably figured out from my blatherings on that subject, that I don't recommend it except for a cheap weekend vacation, if you can book one. Well, as it turns out, one of our listeners and expat wisdom seminar guys, Patrick, who got the Puerto Rican conversation started by getting some boots on the ground down there himself, he just shot me an email mentioning a few things he forgot to say about Puerto Rico, and he starts by saying, "Hey, Johnny, forgot to add that San Juan, Puerto Rico traffic is an absolute nightmare. Not to mention, Puerto Rico has a very large illegal immigration problem. People from other Latin American countries like Haiti, Dominican Republic, and Cuba are piling in. The intent being Puerto Rico as a springboard to the U.S. mainland. Many of the cabbies, as a matter of fact, are Dominicans whom the Puerto Ricans look down on. And by the way, Puerto Rico is one of the only places that's still considered on U.S. soil that doesn't have a massive Mexican population. Just thought I'd add that to the mix. Thanks, Johnny." All right, Patrick, thank you for that update. And like always, I have my 2 cents to add. Now, as it turned out, and I mentioned in a past show, the Dominicans are flooding into Puerto Rico because naturally they think it's the next best thing to get into the U.S. since it is a U.S. Commonwealth and all that. So there's big clandestine trafficking between those two islands, Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. They're only about 50 or 60 miles apart. So, as you might imagine, at night there are a lot of underlit boats passing stealthily between those two places. In fact, it's said there are so many illegal Dominicans in Puerto Rico looking to the U.S. as their final destination somehow that no one's got an exact figure. And get this, because there are so many illegal Dominicans and the government of Puerto Rico is absolutely broke. In fact, it's bankrupt. And you know, to back that up, I just saw an article today in an international newspaper saying that Puerto Rican officials are knocking on doors of international bankers and the IMF, etc., looking for bailout money because they're about to crash and burn. They're so broke that massive government layoffs and huge cuts in services are the next step. To which I say, good. Lay them all off and cut the services. Or I should say, what services? Because, you know, throughout Latin America, the only services you really get are the ones you pay for yourself. But you knew that already, right? And here's some news. Puerto Rico's so broke that politicians, like so many politicians in the States, have the big idea that they can somehow arrange it so all the illegals, the Dominicans and Haitians and Cubans, etc., can be tricked into working on the books and then pay taxes. Yeah, right. Good luck with that. So then how do these shit-for-brains politicians think they're going to do that? Well, just like turd-headed politicians are doing in the southwestern United States, they've authorized a bill to give illegal aliens the right to a legal authorized driver's license. Yep, I'm sure you've heard that drill before, haven't you? Anyway, the brilliant bankrupt government of Puerto Rico feels that once an illegal holds a legitimate driver's license, they'll come out from under the gray cash economy and apply for a job that's on the books and therefore pay taxes. They'll be able to use the driver's license document as kind of a quasi-legal ID and proof of residency. But, you know, the word on the street amongst the illegal Dominicans in Puerto Rico is that, sure, they'll go get the driver's license, but they'll just keep on with their regular plans to get to the States. And how do they do that? Well, once they've saved up enough money, between $3,000 and $5,000, which is about a year's salary for most Puerto Ricans, by the way, and about 2 years' salary for most illegal Dominicans, then they connect with an underground passport broker. So what's that? Well, you see, since Puerto Rican residents can go visa-free to the U.S. on their passports, those Puerto Rican passports are good as gold, to Latins from other countries that cannot get into the U.S. legally without jumping through a million hoops. So what some Puerto Rican adults do is they sell their own passports to black market passport dealers for maybe $1,000 to $2,000, and then that passport broker turns around and sells them to illegal Dominicans in the country, taking into account the height, weight, and general look of the original passport holder as to best match up the purchaser with his new passport. Now, if you think that matching up business is difficult, these passport brokers can have 20, 30, even 50 passports at a time in their possession, so it's a lot easier than you might think. And besides that, remember, at least up till now, there are no fingerprints recorded on passports. And as one passport broker said, it's to our great advantage that most gringos think all Latins kind of look alike. But, like he said, it's not like you can do a deal like that in 20 minutes, even if they slap down the money. Depending on your height, weight, face, and general look, etc., sometimes you gotta wait 2, 3, even 6 months before we find a decent match. And then you might ask, what happens to the Puerto Ricans who sell their passports? Well, after pocketing a grand or two in the sale, if they ever want to travel out of the country because they really don't need their passport for anything else, all you got to do is wait a year or two or five, the longer the better, go back to immigration, stand in line for about 8 hours as usual, and apply once again for a passport saying their former one was lost, stolen, spindled, stapled, or mutilated by perhaps a marauding driveway chicken or two. And I found out what some cautious Puerto Ricans do who've sold their passports in that way. They wait till about a year before their passport's about to expire. Then they sell it to one of these black market brokers. Then, after that year, they go down to the passport agency and get themselves a new one. Reason for wanting a new one? The old one expired. No heavy questions then. And naturally, since it is a Latin American country, the passport office is chaotic and mostly in a shambles. Meaning the misfiling of paperwork, computer problems, viruses, breakage, and the usual computer errors and screw-ups multiplied by 10. Not to mention high heat and humidity, power outages, poor maintenance, if any at all. Bottom line, in Latin American countries, the passport and immigration offices, etc., are not one-tenth as organized as similar bureaucracies in the first world, which ain't saying much. Oh, and by the way, if you're down here long enough and you know your Spanish a bit and read the papers, you'll notice that every few months or so, there's a mass firing at one of the big government bureaus or departments. Why? Usually because cliques of employees are found stealing or selling licenses or passports, selling permits under the table or other documents. Of course, they eventually get caught because they get greedy or want to demonstrate their newfound wealth, or more likely, they just go home and brag about it. And that's why, by the way, so many Latin lawyers can grease or fix things for a fee. It's not that the lawyer himself is crooked, it's just that's how the wheels turn down here. Like expat Eddie always says, what's your time worth? Do you want to stand in line for 8 hours, or do you want to pay some guy $10 and get it done in a half an hour? So then, the righteous first world person might say, what about all those poor schmucks standing in the sun, the ones you just took cuts in front of? Well, you can't help if you got the $10 and they don't. And if you're not good with that, well, just go ahead and stand in that line 8 hours yourself. But do bring a book, and note you'll be the only one there with one. And you know, that brings up a much bigger issue. For all you expat wannabes and gonna-bes up there in Poughkeepsie and Cleveland, if you are the righteous, straight arrow type, you know, equal opportunity, justice for all, you're going to have a hard time dealing with things down here in Latin America, at least at first anyway. Like one long-term expat told me, if you're the save the world type, you probably realized already the first world ain't worth saving. At least when you come down here, you can save yourself. That's easy. Okay, now changing gears a bit. I was just talking to my buddy about pollution here in Latin America. We were talking about how all the lakes and rivers are totally polluted. We got on that subject after watching a bunch of stupid Europeans swimming in a lake that we know is polluted and has been for a long, long time. We were talking about the fact that 17 out of the 21 little towns around that lake run their sewage and drain water right into it. Now the question is, should we have gone up to those Europeans and explained all that? Would you? They were French, you know. Now, alongside those folks, there were backpackers too, and backpackers generally don't give a damn. So giving them the bad news like that can not only be a waste of breath, You know, often they're kind of irritated that you even brought it up. Live and learn, right? Now, on the subject of bottled water, which we were talking about too, I've spoken to enough backpackers who've told me that they drink water right from the tap wherever they go. The locals do it, they say, and they're all right. After all, you eat a pound of dirt a year, and I guess it is something like 20 spiders, right? Come to think of it, my grandma used to say that too. So what about bottled water? Well, I use it, but not to drink directly. Maybe washing fruits and vegetables or brushing your teeth with, as long as you don't swallow the water. Anyway, my buddy who lives in Mexico City, and of course, all you guys who've been there or been in Latin America, you know they don't call it Mexico City. It's called Distrito Federal, which means the federal district. And you know, down here in Latin America, when you get plates for your car, it usually has your department or district printed on the bottom of it. So if you're in Mexico and you're from Mexico City, the federal district, it says DF on your plate. That's Distrito Federal. So that's where the car was registered. Just like, for example, in Colombia, the plate will say Medellin or Cartagena right on it. Now, of course, for smaller Latin countries like Honduras and Salvador and Nicaragua, it'll just say Nicaragua or Honduras or Salvador. The cities and districts themselves are too small and unimportant to be stamped on the plate. At least, that's what the guy at the driver's license bureau told me. Anyway, back to the point. My longtime gringo friend from the federal district says it's so polluted in Mexico City, air, water, and everything else you can think of. Even though, if you sit down and look at who's doing the real air polluting, you'll see it's factories and government-run regular bus and chicken bus lines. So, you think the government will do anything about that? No. Instead, you'll see that the government plan is to extort more money from car drivers. By that, I mean the Mexican government has created a huge, money-making, confusing transit regulation bureaucracy. Can we expect anything less? For example, note that some older cars, certain cars that are 8 to 15 years old, can only be driven legally one day a week and two Saturdays a month. And if a car is more than 15 years old, it can only be driven one day a week and never on Saturdays. So then, what about Sundays? Who knows? Now, you might ask reasonably, in a totally corrupt country like Mexico, how do those laws get enforced, if at all? And who really benefits? Well, my friend said, as you might expect, this law and edicts like it have turned out to be a bonanza for the traffic cops, among others. Now remember, in past shows I've mentioned that cops don't chase you down. They have routine roadblocks where they just flag you over. And it's become routine just to pay off the cops instead of getting the ticket. And for example, if you tip a cop $20 for not giving you a $100 ticket, since the cops only make about $500 or $600 a month, and after taxes, maybe $400, just one car paying a bribe of $20 like that is a whole day's wages for that cop. Now, you have to remember, it's not at all like in the States. If you have a broken taillight or a windshield with a crack in it, and a cop pulls along next to you, surely he's going to pull you over. That happens in the States, he'll instantly give you a ticket and maybe impound your car. But down here in Latin America, you could have 100 violations like that, and a cop will pull right up next to you, look over at you and smile and give you a wave. And that's it. And even if you get flagged down at a roadblock, they're not checking to see if your lights are burned out or your windshield's cracked or you're using seatbelts. Safety checks are non-existent. They're just checking to see that you've paid your yearly licensing fee and your car's registered. It's not about car or personal safety, it's about the money. So then, how do cops know how old your car is or what day your car is allowed on the road? Well, again, it's confusing and chaotic. But some cars have windshield stickers. And if your sticker has a zero or a double zero on it, that means you can drive any day of the week because it's a very new car. Or your car, no matter how old it is, has passed a Mexican air quality control testing station. But the fact is, like my friend said, you can bribe those guys too and get the sticker. Now, if you don't have a sticker like that, the last digit on your license plate determines which days you can drive and which days you can't. And depending on that last digit, you also get a sticker for your windshield. If you have a 5 or 6, you get a yellow. If you have a 7 or 8, you get a pink. A 3 or 4, a red. A 1 or 2, green. So anyway, when you first get down to Mexico City, you'll find it's a bit complicated. But note, if you get in a jam, there's bribery every step of the way. Which is why you still see 100 times a day very old cars that are overloaded, blowing tons of smoke, terrible road hazards with all kinds of safety violations. Now, the way it works is kind of strange. If your car is over a couple years old and you want to drive it every day, you need one of those hologram windshield stickers with a zero or two zeros on it, like I mentioned. So then, how do you get one of those? Well, you can either buy a new car, then you automatically get one of those stickers, or you go down to your local emissions control station. And if you're in the DF, the District Federal, Mexico City, you'll wait in line about 2 to 4 hours, pay a fee, naturally, and get your exhaust gases tested. Now remember, it's 100% voluntary to get your emissions tested. If you don't get that sticker, that is, if you don't volunteer to get your older car tested, meaning any car that's more than 2 years old, you gotta follow the rule of the last digit on your license plate, which restricts you to driving maybe 2 or 3 days a week. Clear as a tax form, huh? Now, gringos have asked, what if they drive their own car down from Texas or Cleveland? How does that affect them? Well, since July 1st, 2014, all foreign-plated vehicles cannot drive on Saturdays at all. And then it gets even more complicated. If your Ohio license plate ends in 3, for example, from a chart I'm looking at right now, that means from Monday to Friday, it cannot be driven between 5 a.m. and 11 a.m. And you can't drive on Wednesday from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. And that's just part of it. There are other, even more weird regulations for locals who have cars for Saturdays and Sundays. Oh, and by the way, you can get a special tourist pass that allows you to drive anywhere in Mexico City for up to 2 weeks. For another fee, of course. If you go down and get that voluntary emissions testing thing done. And if you don't pass, though, you probably will because you're coming from the States where you get tested all the time. If not, you just bribe the guy. Or not. And of course, you'll be in Mexico, so he'll let you know that he's bribable. Or not. Because, you know, in Latin America, anyway, there's always that 5% of government workers who aren't bribable. Especially when there are other people around watching. Because these days, someone could catch it on camera. Oh, and by the way, for your information, since I was an engineer in a past life, I can tell you it's very easy to beat the emission controls test, even if your car's blown smoke. Tricks of the trade, you know. That said, you might ask, with all this huge Mexican bureaucracy in the emission control business, at last count, more than 20,000 lard-ass do-nothing workers throughout the country, well then, has air pollution decreased as promised? You know, it's a case of yes and no. The government says it has statistics that show air pollution has decreased dramatically. So then why do so many people still wear masks? And when quizzing hospital emergency room docs, why are respiratory problems always within the top 3 complaints? Now, it's true. Since the program started in 1989, certain components of air pollution have gone down. But mostly, non-government sources say, because they took the lead out of the gas not so long ago and greatly reformulated the gasoline mixture to take out dirty components like sulfur. Anyway, that said, if this hasn't convinced you that Mexico City, the federal district, the Distrito Federal, is a very touchy place to live, besides the fact they've only got about 6 months' worth of water left in their aquifers, but that's another story. Well, if you still insist on hanging or living there, you really are a clueless gringo. Okay, now for something completely different. Just a couple days ago, I got an email from a lady who's doing a tour through Latin America, specifically Central America. She and her husband, who are in their mid-40s, are just kind of tripping around, looking at different places, with about 90% of their travels off the gringo tourist trail, as recommended by yours truly. Along the way, she said they lived with an immersion family for 2 weeks and got deathly ill on the food. What else is new? And she said, through that very nice immersion family, her and her husband started getting invited to little parties, the things that I talk about on the show. She said, Johnny, boy, were you right about getting those invites. Quinceañeros parties, baptisms, confirmations, weekend barbecues. And get this, she even said she went to a going-away party, a barbecue for a guy and his cousin who were going to Texas. Later, she found out they had no visas, but they were just going to go by coyote and sneak in illegally. Nope, she said, with middle and lower middle class families, it seems kind of like a rite of passage. Every family, it seems, has a few members who snuck into the States. And there's no embarrassment about it. In fact, they're proud every time someone in the family becomes an American. And that's just how they phrase it in Spanish. They say, mi primo es americano. My cousin is an American. Legal or not, they say he's an American. Though the illegal or mojado part, the wetback part, is almost never discussed. And once again, I'll remind you that the word wetback down here in Latin America, mojado in Spanish, is not a derogatory term. It just means someone who's snuck into the States. In fact, the word illegal or ilegal is almost never used. It's if and when they get deported back, that's when a dark cloud kind of hangs over the family for a week or two. But back to the email. She went on to say, while talking to one of these guys, she found out that he was going to Dallas to work in a car repair shop owned by another one of his relatives, a guy who'd snuck into the States some 15 years ago and apparently made his mark. Now, speaking of these little parties and events that her and her husband have been invited to through their immersion family, note that since these are middle and lower middle class families, they don't have the money to rent hotel salons and halls, so they always have their events at someone's house, which they decorate up nicely with banners and ribbons, etc. Most of the time, along with a backyard barbecue or churrasquera or churrasco down here. Now, here's the part in her email I wanted to read to you. You're going to find this interesting. You know, Johnny, I'm not the most flamboyant of people. Ask my husband, Bob. You could say I'm an introvert. It's my husband who's more the extroverted type. And since I'm a so very light-skinned Nordic type of person, I blush rather easily. And unfortunately, often. And here's what I want to know. What is the proper etiquette? I mean, what do I do when I walk into a room at some kind of get-together, a party or a christening or whatever, and suddenly everyone's staring at me, not only because I'm the only gringo woman in the room, my husband being the only gringo guy, but so often, with the middle class people especially, as soon as we walk into the room, one by one, the people stand up. And sometimes for the first 30 seconds or so, it gets very silent. Everyone kind of stops what they're doing and saying to pay attention to me. And then, because I have blonde, almost white hair and piercing blue eyes, I get the blue ojos or blue eyes comments, sometimes along with an ooh or an ah. And you know, it's kind of unnerving. They get out of their chairs and off the sofa, out of respect, I guess. Respect for what? I don't know. But all of a sudden, we're standing there. Our Spanish isn't very good, and everybody's standing up looking at us. Then, as usual, I turn bright red and speechless. Now, I know they mean well, and everyone's smiling and congenial, very congenial. As for me, I am a bit uncomfortable. I'm no visiting dignitary. That's why sometimes I dread walking into these places. I gotta tell you, I never had that kind of treatment back in Louisville. Yes, I know, I really stand out. It's bad enough I'm a foot taller than everyone, including the men, and my skin is lily white. I guess it must be the hair that gets them, I don't know. So then what do you do during that pregnant pause where everyone stands up and kind of looks at you? I guess I'm assuming that may have happened to you too, but maybe not. All the best, Johnny. Listen to your show faithfully every week. Signed, June. Well, June, all I've got to say is welcome to Latin America off the gringo tourist trail. Now you know what it's like to be a B-grade rock star. That's what I always say. And you're right, over the years, that's happened a lot to me too. And for me, I'll tell you, it's the height, the blue eyes, and the white skin. And you know, when I first got down here and it started happening to me, I didn't know if I should go around the room and shake everybody's hand and kiss everyone on the cheek or what. And make no mistake about it, when you're the only gringo or gringa in the room, or at the party, you do get noticed and people are always checking you out of the corner of their eye. Just like you might do if, let's say, you were at a party in Cleveland and someone nudged you and say, hey, you know who just came in? The bass player or maybe the drummer from Cheap Trick or Foreigner or REO Speedwagon. Sure, they might be has-been dinosaurs of rock, but everybody kind of remembers those bands were popular. Anyone of a certain over-the-hill hair-sweet age, that is. Now, of course, even when they were popular 35 years ago, Nobody even knew or cared who the bass player or drummers of those bands were. But they sure got invited to all the parties and got all the backstage passes now, didn't they? That's, I guess, what a B or a C-grade rock star goes through all the time. That's why, like I always say, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, there will be times when you experience that. Obviously, June, with you, you're getting a pretty hefty dose of it. And it's really part of the gringo advantage, and in your case, I guess, a sort of gringo disadvantage. My advice? Roll with it. That said, I gotta say, in a way, you're lucky that you brought your husband down to Latin America with you. Because, you know, a real blonde-haired, blue-eyed, light-skinned, tall gringo like you would probably have to learn self-defense or carry a baseball bat around. Because if I know these Latin guys, they'd be hitting on you like an air hammer. In fact, I'll bet they're doing that already, aren't they? When husband Bob's not around, right? So again, expat, gonna-be, and wannabe ladies, it's worth repeating that when you come down here, you're gonna experience some of that. It doesn't matter how old or young you are either. That said, we're getting towards the end of the show now, so if you're interested in getting in on an early bird deal for my next expat wisdom seminar, the next one should be in July 2015. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com or johnny@expatwisdom.com, about these seminars. Now, let me tell you a funny little story about my last expat wisdom seminar, which took place in January. Now, as usual, almost everybody that attended that seminar told me that their friends and relatives said they were nuts, said it was dangerous, said, look out, keep your eyes open, and get this, some of the attendees even told me the folks back home were going to pray for them. No lie. But the story that takes the cake comes from two very nice, smart guys, a father and son team, by the way, who came down. Now, the dad pulled me aside and told me, in front of the son, at the very last day of the seminar, that his wife was so freaked out and worried about he and his son coming down that she insisted that he write out a few blank checks to her in case he never came back so that she could have access to the bank accounts. They said she was crying and sobbing the whole time, begging them not to go. So I asked them how they handled it, and they said at that point they were kind of worried themselves. But now, when they think back on it, they just crack up laughing. Why? Not only did they find it ridiculous, but they had the best trip of their lives.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old style.